Welcome, everyone, to Jubilee Street, a music podcast.
Sweet Jesus.
It's 4:20 p.m. You see that?
I do.
I am Ian McCurtis. That's Jake Curtis.
Hi.
And today we're talking about When I First Came to Town by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
There was a podcast named Jubilee Street, a music podcast hosted by Jake and
right, we're back with another Bad Seeds episode. Sweet Jesus.
There's no turning back. Coming back.
There's no coming turning back.
There's no something.
There's no turning back on this coming.
Do you ever notice that when you were a kid, the songs you like, you knew all the words to, and now I can listen to a song 100 times and not know the words?
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Even these songs that we do for the Nick Cave songs I know so well, You like read a lyric off and I can't finish it. I'm like, I fucking know it, but I don't know it.
This is a good you know, way to start the episode. So I think this is one of the catchier Nick Cave tunes from this era.
I think this is a slept on song. I don't know why this isn't like one of the bigger songs on this record.
I, of course, didn't do enough research. I'm curious if this is one they play live.
Only
I
say played
this,
live four times ever.
Yeah, I figured.
Which is crazy.
Henry's Dream doesn't feel like an album they play a lot from.
And, you know, they do Straight to You, Brother My Cup Is Empty, Papa Won't Leave You, Henry. Mm-hmm.
But there's so many strong songs on this album. Christina the Astonishing, the ones you mentioned. I think I listened to the entire album yesterday, like one and a half times, like just from this song back to this song and then like another half. And Loom of the Land, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
That song's awesome. And yeah, I just had a good time with this. I figured summer's coming, so let's do a little bit of a road trip album, so to speak. And, you know, I don't know if
this
I would
is
be
a good road trip album.
I don't know if I'd be scared or excited or just think I've reached the circus if when I see that billboard from Henry's Dream.
I know we've done some songs from this album, but I don't know if we talked about how the Neil Young influence, they recorded it with David Briggs, who worked with Neil Young, Crazy Horse, you know, one of Neil Young's dudes. And
yeah,
I think you can really hear it on this song.
I was planning to bring that up, actually. It sounds very much like a Neil Young record, but I think what's funny is that isn't it notorious for Nick Cave not liking the mixing?
Mm-hmm.
So he like was like really unhappy with it, and it led to the Live Seeds recordings because
He
wanted to do the songs justice, as I think with the
you
Wikipedia page
said. You always
see that
with the like auteur musicians. Like, I was just listening to how Jack White always hates the mixes on what any of those like bands or artists that have like a strong creative vision. They always hate them. You know, they want to do it themselves.
We just did this. We covered the Smashing Pumpkins up.
Billy, album, all those kind of people.
And Billy Corgan was super anal about those, how everything sounded and overdubbed guitars and stuff like that. I don't really have a problem with the production on this album. It sounds like a Bad Seeds record.
I think it sounds different than anything before it, though, and maybe Nick Cave didn't like that. But
yeah,
from this point on, this is kind of how the records would sound. So,
what do you think sounds different? Like, I think Good Son was before this one.
This is the first one that just like completely strips away the noisiness.
Yeah,
of those first couple albums.
There's a lack of microphone ambience that the last ones had. Where I don't know if.
Oh yeah, like natural reverb. Like that's kind of gone. Yeah, it just sounds happier.
Yeah, and the thing is that I think David Briggs had them do a live in studio recording, right? And initially they were tracking. So it was, or not, I don't know the terms here. They do like an individual track. So like bass, drums, guitar, it wasn't all at the same time. And I think that's what Nick didn't like about it.
Yeah, Neil Young always, you know, loves to do the band playing together kind of way of recording, which is a lot harder. It's harder to get it to sound good. And instead of one person having to play the whole song right, all four, however many people, they all have to nail it. And
yeah,
that can be hard.
So when I first came to town, if there's ever a Nick Cave biopic, this is the getting the band back together song, right?
Yeah.
As soon as you hear that boom, boom, bam, boom, boom, like the little guitar lick in the beginning, it's just going to be like a quick montage of Nick, like, you know, shooting heroin and then like playing shows and then like shaking people's hands.
This is a good montage song.
Yeah.
Like Paul Thomas Anderson or somebody can use it.
Yeah. I thought the same thing.
The guitar part is so, it's like a picked chord, you know, yeah. Like it's guitar forward in a way that like, there's not a lot of bad seat songs. So like, I was thinking, you remember, during COVID when Nick Cave did that thing where he asked people to cover his songs and I did the idiot prayer.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is one I considered. And I think if he ever did that again, this is the one.
Oh, yeah, like a stripped down version?
No, not even like, I think there's like a indie rock feel to this song that,
yeah,
I don't know if any other Bad Seed songs has. Like, I could see a cover going in like a Me Without You direction,
mm-hmm.
or even like an Arcade Fire direction. There's just like something about the song that feels kind of indie rock.
It does. It'd be cool to see Rat or Wednesday cover this.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'd do a cool cover of it. I think that also made me realize when you said guitar forward, this is one of the few Nick Cave songs where I think the guitar doesn't blend into the background.
Yeah, it's like that picked chord is like
it's like
that carries the song, not the piano part or, you know, whatever it usually
exactly.
is.
It's usually like piano, bass, drum, or Nick's voice.
And a lot of times it's kind of like the bass, especially this era, is just kind of like a dark post-punky
mm-hmm.
groove. This song has like a rock bass part, like a Neil Young song would have. It's just like a pretty standard, it's a good bass part, but it's not like dark and groovy
mm-hmm.
like a lot of the stuff is.
We're not covering the whole record, but I think the overall like driving quality, you know, no pun intended with like the road trip thing, but it none of this, the song doesn't really drag at all. Like it maintains momentum, it stays like fun. And then I think to kind of get into some of the performances on the song, there's a voice that you hear in the chorus, and I was like, this doesn't sound like Blixa. Warren wouldn't have really been doing anything with the band yet. It must be a feature. Well, it's Conway Savage doing a duet in the chorus, and it's great.
It's like almost like a country harmony.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's a Neil Young-esque.
Well, it sounds like a Crazy Horse song, where they all just like come to the same microphone.
I love it. I'm like, why didn't they do this more?
Yeah.
If Conway Savage could sing, like...
Yeah.
The harmonies are so good. They kind of make the song.
It was a treat. It was a treat to just like come back to knit, like to the Bad Seeds, because we've done a couple other things since then, or between the last Nick Cave song we covered, and this was just a lot of fun. Yeah,
I'm of the school of thought, the Beach Boys school. If you got multiple people in the band that can sing, you should be having harmonies left and right
mm-hmm,
all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That Wednesday album, I'm like, why didn't MJ Linderman sing more? Like,
yeah.
If you got another person who can sing, give me all the harmonies.
Absolutely. I thought the same thing. Conway Savage, I think, has passed away, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't playing with the Bad Seeds.
But they've always had, I mean, almost everyone in the Bad Seeds has a solo project. They can all sing at least mm-hmm. a little bit.
What was Conway Savage's solo project?
I don't know about him. Maybe he had one. I mean, currently, like, well, like Blixa, you know, had Neubauten, mm-hmm. Warren Ellis has Dirty 30.
Kid Congo Powers had.
And I know some of the
Roland S. Howard
people in the band now have solo projects. I can't think of what they're called. But
Mick Harvey had to have had a solo project.
I think Thomas Weidler has something. Like, they all got other stuff, side hustle.
Yeah. Anything stick out about the lyrics? Any significance to you there?
What was the last Nick Cave song we did? I meant to look this up and then
we can check real quick.
But yeah, the just the major theme of the song being, I think it's the kind of thing everyone has a fear. What's the phrase? Familiarity breeds contempt.
Liar of Orpheus was the last one we
Liar
did.
Liar of Orpheus.
Familiarity breeds contempt.
Yeah, I think this song's just that vibe of like, once people get to know me, they're not going to like me.
Yeah.
What is that? Didn't we just talk about that idea? And I can't remember what song it was. It wasn't Liar of Orpheus. There was something we just did recently where we were talking about that, where that fear people have, like if people knew the real me.
Jack Harlow. I think that's got to be what it was.
But yeah, this song, he's like, I don't want to stay in one place for too long, because anytime I do, people start to hate me.
Yeah. Now I'm worried. That seems a little too deep for that Jack Harlow record, so I don't know, but that seems like...
Oh, it was Wednesday. It was that song, the single, the Chosen to Deserve.
Oh.
That whole song, she's like...
Yeah, that sounds more right.
She's
yeah.
like, I'm glad we started dating before you knew me really well, because you wouldn't, mm-hmm. you know.
Man, I love that album.
This song's the same idea. I think it's the same idea. I think he's just like, I got to move on from place to place. Cause...
Yeah,
There's a line where it was like, people used to do favors for me, now the whores won't even open the door, or something like that. That's like yeah. really good.
Well, the first lines, you know, when I first came to town, all the people gathered around, you know, bought him drinks and stuff like that. Until they changed their tune. I think that's just a very like overall relatable line for anybody. Like, I'm sure you had this experience going to punk shows or like hanging out in like the music community in Louisville. But there's like this thing I would notice when I was in Android 18, where I was going to bars and like partying a little more. And there would be these people who would just like show up in these friend groups that I'd never seen before. And they would be like, oh yeah, this is Monster. He's from Columbus and he's gonna, you know, he's hanging out, you know, and Monster would then just be like in all the social media and the Instagram friends and all that stuff. And it would seem like fresh and new. And then he would just kind of become a local. And there's something interesting about that idea where it's like, you want to be known and you want, you know, but being a local almost feels kind of cringe.
I was just talking to that with my sister, with Mallory, mm-hmm. last week. Do you remember there was like a period where within our like little punk world, people would just go to Maine in the summer to pick blueberries and make money? Do you remember that? That was like a thing a lot of like crust punk kind of people did.
No, but that sounds right. I mean, yeah, that definitely, I know what you're talking about.
But I was telling Mallory about that for some reason, and that was so foreign to her, the like idea of just like doing that. Yeah. But when you come from like the punk music world, people just, I'm just going to go to this city for 3 months. Yeah, it's just mm-hmm. like.
It's very nomadic.
Yeah.
And they almost always owned a moped.
And although I guess we never did that.
Yeah.
Just bouncing around, like, we knew tons of people that did. That was just kind of the lifestyle in that subculture.
I'd even say when I would say like between like 2013 to like 2016, I would kind of just like hang out with random people I didn't know very well. Like, I went to Chicago with Jake Snyder one time and I hung out with him and this like really cool woman who was like an illustrator, and she had Bart Kira. But I know I've talked to you about that before. It's like Akira, but with Simpsons characters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and, you know, we stayed with her, and unfortunately I have... Cause
dude, that's something, not to get annoying and talk about AI every episode.
It's okay.
Those, like, cool indie comics where they just, like,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to do the Phoenix Saga, but it's all going to be Sonic.
Yeah, like, that's such a good idea.
AI is going to ruin all that because you can just type it in.
Like, yeah, it's...
Akira, but with the Simpsons. And then
I think my only rebuttal to that is it's AI... In what I've experienced, like, AI art is like, it looks really cool. Like, you made some kind of Nick Cave as Sonic the Hedgehog art that was so cool looking, but it has like a like an emptiness to it that I don't think will ever be filled, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing, is like, if you can get machine learning to a point where it can make something that looks like...
Have you seen those Wes Anderson AI trailers?
No.
I'll show it to you after we record this episode. There's a... If Wes Anderson did Lord of the Rings and if Wes Anderson did Star Wars.
So...
And AI made the whole trailer.
I haven't seen those, yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. It looks real.
What I have seen is these YouTube videos of, like, what ifs. Like, what if The Legend of Zelda were an 80s horror mm-hmm. movie, and it's, like, all the characters look like stuff from, like, Return to Oz. Like, kind of a little bit, already creepy, but kind of creepier and all that stuff. But yeah.
Not to, I'm sure we're doing another episode today that AI will probably be a topic, so.
Yeah, definitely.
You were talking about the Bard Akira thing and traveling with random.
Yeah, I met and hung out with that woman who I think dated or is dating, I don't know, the guy from Intuit Over It, Evan something, remember his name?
I remember it was Evan. I don't remember his last name, but yeah.
I want to say like Evan Weissman or something like that, but I don't think that's what it is. He was also in that math rock band that I liked. Fuck.
Yeah, the real heads know that. Most people.
They had a name like Daphne or Euphoria or something like that. I can't think of what it was.
I'm pretty sure it started with a D, but I don't remember what it was.
Defelia or something like that. Oh man, that's going to bother me so much. I've been wanting to revisit that record. Anyway, you know, I hung out with her and she was like in that band Kitty Hawk and stuff like that. And
Kitty Hawk. Yeah.
It's just all to say, like, I remember them. I had a very like kind of,
there's a weird trust in the punk. Cause I did the same thing. I would just like meet someone and they'd be like, I'm thinking about going to see so-and-so in Cincinnati. I'm like, well, I'll go. Where like, there's not many other like worlds where you have that sort of trust with strangers where like, yeah, I'll stay. Yeah, I can just stay at your house after the show, and you don't care. And
I think it had some. It had a lot to do with that kind of punk camaraderie, and also just like being in my 20s. I just like didn't.
You know, they're good people. Like I've never really been wronged by trusting a random punk rock person.
Yeah, except for
I've been
old
taken
boy.
Advantage of by trusting random other people.
Yeah, old boy would I think be the only kind of, you know, nobody's gonna know who we're talking about, but that would be the only guy that was somewhat sketchy.
Yeah.
But no, yeah.
But even then, it could have been worse.
But I think we got off on a little bit of a tangent there. I was just talking about like the sort of freewheeling.
It's a nomadic song.
Yeah, yeah. The way that you can kind of like, I think sort of thinking about like what it means to be a local, what it means to be like a passer, a guy who or a girl who's like or a person who's passing.
That was Buffy right under us. She was like, make sure you say girl too.
Yeah, she's
not just a guy.
She finally showed up to work. She's not working remotely. She's on site today. I'm on site as well.
She could use a cup of coffee, though.
Yeah, she hasn't moved in a while. What else do you have?
I keep sidetracking you.
No, it's okay.
You've been saying the same paragraph for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
you're saying nomadic song.
No, I made pretty much the point I was saying. I just I resonate with this song because of all the stuff I've stated and that, like, it can feel exciting and new when you first come to a place and then it starts to feel like everywhere else, you know? I don't know if that's the exact sentiment he's getting at with the song, but that's what I took away from it.
Yeah, this is one where I don't know, because he's telling a tale, like, you know, it's you know, kind of fairy-tale-ized, and I don't know how deep or genuine the feelings go,
mm-hmm.
but it's kind of cool. You can think it's as genuine as you want. It is neat because the birthday party and the first couple of Bad Seeds records, a lot of the songs are just like, look at me, I'm a fucking piece of shit. I'm a horrible person,
mm-hmm.
and let's celebrate it. And this song is like, I feel like one of the first where it's like remorseful. It's like mm-hmm. I turn people away. And
so
sort of the other side of the coin of a song like Stagger Lee or something, where it's just like, I'm going to fucking kill everyone.
That unlocked something for me. So this album is, I feel like we had to bring it up. It's based around like John Berryman. And either a poem or like something that he wrote. And there's like a writerly quality to this song. Like what was the line you said earlier about like doors and whores?
Yeah, now the whores won't even open their doors.
Yeah, and then there's a line like, I watched the juicers burn their fires. Like,
yeah, that one.
There's and then even the chorus, like, oh sweet Jesus, there's no turning. There's like a, this feels like a more developed, like,
very poetic
writing hand from Nick on this album. And
yeah, the lyrics of this song would function as a poem if you just printed them out.
Yeah, exactly. And I just watched Exorcist 3, and the writer of The Exorcist directed that movie.
The writer of the book.
Yeah, the writer of the book, The Exorcist, directed Exorcist 3.
But were there three Exorcist books, or?
No.
They're just the one Exorcist.
There's a whole tangent. I think there's The Exorcist, The Ninth Configuration, which is unrelated but included in the trilogy, and then Legion, which is what Exorcist 3 is based on.
Oh, gotcha.
And there's these scenes in Exorcist 3 that are very, like, again, like, writerly, like, where it just feels like somebody took dialogue from a book mm-hmm. and had two people do it on screen.
That's how Aaron Sorkin always feels.
I love it. But, I mean,
I get to. I know people make fun of it, and I get why.
I think we're marks for that stuff because it feels more like theater.
That's what it is. We both love, like, in a TV show when they do, like, a 5-minute shot without cutting.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it just feels like theater. It feels so exciting.
Or anytime anyone does a monologue
there
or something like that.
There was an episode of Succession that was kind of real time.
Mm-hmm.
And they shot it like a normal episode, but then Kieran Culkin was like, what if we do the whole episode in one take?
Mm-hmm.
And they did it. They learned the whole script. And
that's awesome.
I think that stuff's so cool.
Yeah. I love knowing like those kind of things going into like the production of like TV shows and stuff like that.
Yeah, John Berryman. I know Nick Cave is a huge fan of him. He's got a... Have we done We Call Upon the Author?
Yes. That's,
I think that song...
That song's awesome. Mentions
Berryman by name.
We call upon the author to explain. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that sounds really good.
Yeah, John Berryman jumped off a bridge, I believe. Himself.
Speaking of AI, look at all the ads I have on my phone.
What is that top left one?
It looks like a Plumbus thing or like a fleshlight.
Could be both. Could be Rick and Morty branded.
There's like a padded like legging thing. That's so funny. Sorry, what were you saying? We're all tangenty today.
I was just saying Berryman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the writerly quality and the kind of like it's got Henry's Dream just has like a storybook charm to it. Like every song kind of features either like kind of a fable-y kind of story, and it just feels a lot like a Faulkner novel, like in As I Lay Dying, like when they enter into town carrying the mother's corpse, and it's all like very normal seeming, even though they're like, this body's been like rotting for like a week, and they're just like acting like they're just carrying this coffin around.
Well, that's like magical realism kind of. I love when crazy shit's going on and you just ride it like droll and plain.
Exactly. Like it's normal to these people because they're just trying to get this, you know, person from point A to point B. That's my kind of road trip story.
Like it's written so dryly, but it's like crazy shit.
You know, you bring up Kafka a lot. I don't think I've ever read anything by Kafka.
Oh, almost everything's really short. You could read a lot of the big...
The Metamorphosis is the one I remember you always talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, just very... they're just like stories that stick with you. Like I just think about them all the time. He has such a distinct way of writing that no one else does.
I mean, that's like... I'm not saying he wrote fables, but that's like what...
Similar to Jean-Paul Sartre, just like... You just like remember the style because it's so unique.
The Stranger, right?
That's Albert Camus.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that's another...
They're lumped in together.
I think I've probably read something by Sartre, but I'm more familiar with like the ideas behind him. Camus, I'm much more.
Camus, we like, at least in Kentucky, that's taught in high school.
Yeah.
And Sartre's not, even though they're... So, yeah, that's the one.
I found an
most
old
of us would be more familiar with.
Copy of Camus' The Stranger... Add a book off before I moved for like 99 cents.
Great book. Great Cure, book. There's a Cure song about it on the first album.
Which one?
It's called Killing an Arab.
Okay. coming in hot.
It's not on Spotify, which...
That must be on Pornography.
No, it's on the first album. They're okay. They got bullied into... It is so non-offensive. Like, that is in the book. And it's a great song. And, you know, probably some white person said it was offensive.
So I guess we can go into the final verse, which is like, "O Lord, every goddamn turn I take, I fear the noose, I fear the stake." What do we think's going on there?
He's like Frankenstein getting hunted.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't want the mob coming after him. Cancel culture mob, the woke libs trying to cancel Nick Cave.
So is the
for going to the coronation?
Is the okay? That's a good transition. What's going on with that? I've seen so many things about, like, people should stop giving Nick Cave shit, and I think even his wife posted something about it.
He got invited to the coronation, and he got some letters on the Red Hand Files where people were like, it's bullshit that you're going. It was probably, like, three people.
Yeah.
You know how that stuff works.
So many people have been like, fuck the king recently, and...
Because, yeah, people are like, fuck the monarch, fuck all that. And I agree, too, but, like, there hasn't been a coronation for 80 years. If I got invited... I'd go just because it's so ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did you see pictures of them, like, putting the crown on his head? And it's stupid.
It's completely...
If I got invited, of course I would go. It doesn't mean I support the guy, but, like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Same as, like, if Trump invited me to the inauguration.
Oh, yeah.
I'd probably go.
Yeah.
When am I going to get invited to a presidential inauguration?
Yeah.
Fuck the guy, but, like...
Yeah.
I'll go watch it for the pageantry.
You could be like, that guy from Family Guy. Boo, you're just a big phony.
But yeah, I don't think going to an event means you support the event necessarily, especially when it's something so crazy.
I think you can make that argument if you were invited and you didn't buy a ticket.
And he's also not a politician. It'd be one thing if he was like, representing other people.
Yeah. But now he's just representing genocide, generally.
Representing anyone who's lost a family member, because that's all anyone ever asks him about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, not Nick Cave representing genocide, the king. That would be a weird turn for Nick Cave.
We were talking, who was that? I think it might have been my family. If America had a king or queen, just like someone who held no, they held no actual power.
Mm-hmm.
They just like represented the country.
Symbolic.
Symbolic, yeah, exactly. Who do you think would be the American monarch?
That's a great question. My gut reaction was Donald Trump.
No, like someone that met it, like symbolically represents the country. Everyone, almost everyone in the country thinks they're good. Like,
oh, I see. Well, that seems antithesis to the idea of a monarch or
in Britain, in the England sense, in the sense of, like, we're going to start it today and it's going to be someone we're proud of. And I think I had three answers. Obama.
Right. Okay.
Tom Hanks.
Okay.
Beyonce.
So I would say Rihanna.
Rihanna.
Zendaya.
Is she from America, though? Isn't she from Trinidad and or Tobago?
They have to be from America.
I guess that's a good point.
Yeah.
She wouldn't have
it's our, we're creating the monarchy.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
All
go
right.
Ahead. Go ahead. Go off. Go off, King.
Courtney Love.
People don't like Courtney Love. you're thinking of the people, it's got to be the people with the highest favorability record. Like, everyone's like, yes. Tom Hanks is our king. Everyone loves Tom Hanks.
I feel like I would have probably said Will Smith like 3 years ago.
That would have been a good one until the slap. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Bill Cosby would have been a great one 10 years ago.
I wish I liked Harry Styles more, because I feel like Harry Styles. Lizzo. I think Lizzo would be a good choice.
Lizzo would be a great choice.
Jack Black. Oh, it's Jack Black. That's who it is.
Jack Black's a great
Jack
choice.
Black is the monarch, and then Lizzo can be the co-monarch. We'll have two monarchs.
Tom Hanks. I feel like most people love Tom Hanks.
Take him or leave him.
I mean, not, that's what I said earlier. I mean, Tom Cruise.
I saw Sarah Sherman recently on, I posted about that Stavros Halkias guy.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how great that Elvis movie was and how awesome it was that Tom Hanks was in that fat suit.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of agreed. Like, Tom Hanks in that movie is completely ridiculous and funny.
I haven't seen it.
It's worth watching. I didn't dislike it. And Austin Butler's really good as Elvis. But that's all to say, Tom Hanks would probably be a runner-up for me.
That should be, somebody should do, they should do like a, you know, they're always looking for like the new reality show or like game show to do on ABC Wednesday at 7 p.m. that costs no money to make.
Yeah.
If they're like the American Monarch and they just like had all these famous celebrities like compete to be the most liked.
That seems
very American reality show.
If I were able to assassinate the king and start and take over a new monarchy, I would make... Have you seen Chicken Shop Date?
No.
This will be lost
on you. In Britain, it would just be Harry Styles, right? Isn't he British?
Well, there's this girl named Amelia de Moldenberg who does a YouTube show called Chicken Shop Date that's just like a really awkward like date where they go to these like different small businesses in England. And she's done episodes with like Jack Harlow and Daniel Kaluuya, and they're all really funny. I feel like she is like an English national treasure. So that would be my choice if I were to reinstate her. And then probably who is our Radiohead from Britain?
Mm-hmm.
Probably Tom York. He'd be just likable and hateable enough. He'd be a good monarch.
Yeah, more realistically, you might just want someone divisive, because then it's fun to like haters can hate.
And then I would demand of Tom York, I'd be like, you have to do all of your announcements as if you were singing
in Radiohead voice
a pyramid song.
Mm.
So it'd be like, bum, 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 Brexit, you know.
Did you say on the Kid Amnesiac episode that Amnesiac was your favorite Radiohead album?
I think I still stand by that, yeah.
I was listening to Bandsplain today, and Yossi said, Amnesiac, your favorite Radiohead album if you're a sociopath.
Well, I think that tracks.
It's like, damn.
Yeah. It's all about spinning plates for me.
That's a great song.
Yeah.
I need to show you that PS5, now that you moved back. The
Amnesiac thing?
The like, it's not a game, but the like virtual experience that I made. It's so cool.
I got to listen to this. What's her name from Bandsplain?
Yossi Salik.
I got to listen to this, Yossi, because I think What's her favorite album?
Maybe it's Amnesiac. She didn't even say. She just has these like one sentence.
I mean, it is a very dark album.
I sent you that Blixo one like a month or two ago.
Yeah.
She just has these little. There was one she was talking about going to the gym, and someone asked her if she listens to Dad Rock at the gym. And she's like, "Do you mean like Wilco? I don't fucking want to listen to Wilco anywhere, especially not the fucking gym."
That's awesome. I'm about to hit my month mark on being unemployed. So I think I have like 2 weeks. So maybe I've been getting into Pokemon again.
I thought you were going to say Wilco.
No. And I'll have to put on Bansplain.
Well, that's how I'll know that you're having a kid. If you like tell me, like, dude, I'm getting into Wilco, I'm like, oh, you're about to have your first kid.
Mm-hmm,
turn into a dad.
We're pregnant.
Yeah. You don't even tell me we're pregnant. Just say, I like Wilco now.
Yeah. I guess I will co to the show. Aren't we doing a Nick Cave podcast?
We are. We were.
I think it doesn't really go past being just, you know, a good song. I think there's better songs on Henry's Dream than this one. And there's others like that I mentioned prior, like Loom of the Land and stuff like that, and Jack the Ripper, I think, is a fantastic song that I'd have a good time talking about. This one, serviceable, you know?
I love it because it's so, it's just a good time. Were you talking about a while ago about how Nick Cave can be a weird thing to put on in the car? Were you talking about that with like Haley or with your mom or something? Maybe it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
This whole album is like a good, you put this on in the car with anyone. And
yeah. There's a difference between
not
putting,
not going to turn anybody off.
Yeah. There's a difference between putting this on and Skeleton Tree.
Yeah. You don't want to put Skeleton Tree on. You don't want to put like the first two albums on.
They're going to be like, why are you crying? I'm like, Girl and Amber just started. this is a good one. And I love the chorus in this song. There's not enough like kind of jubilant moments in the Nick Cave discography like this one where it's, and again, it's the Conway Savage, I almost said Conway Twitty, duet. And at the end, I think it changes and it says, there is always one more town a little further around the bend, which I take to mean that like this narrator in particular, like he's run out his luck here and they're going to burn him at the stake. What exactly did he do? Is this actually a song about Stagger Lee? That's just not fucked up.
I mean, it might just be a metaphor for the life of a musician. You just, next day, pack up your stuff, go on to the next town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never lay your boots down for too long.
It's like that TV on the gas station song.
Oh, I thought you were about to say TV on the radio. Yeah, no. TV in the gas pump or whatever.
TV on the gas pump, yeah.
I think about that song every time I get gas because most of the gas stations around here now have those little screens.
That song. Commercials,
having Maria Menounos sell you shit.
That song in 757 by 100 Gex, Live in My Mind Together, because that's the one that has the interior gas station.
Oh,
McDonald's.
Yeah. Our two gas station anthems of 2023.
It's a little conspiratorial. Both those songs came out.
We need, things happen in threes, so there needs to be another 2023. Gas station song.
I mean, that Billy Woods, Kenny Seagal project is all about traveling, but I don't think they mention McDonald's once, do they? They might.
That album is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it's such a punk rock thing. There are countless punk albums about being on tour.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't there like tons of rap albums about tour life? It seems so obvious like to make a song, an album about that. And I was like, why don't all rappers do this?
Yeah. They were watching a lot of season 3 of Atlanta.
I love an album about being on the road.
Mm-hmm. I saw Fantano talked about that album, and the only song he didn't like was Soft Landing. I love that song. It's got that cool guitar lick. It's like the second track on the album.
Mm.
It's like, dun, 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 tell you how I feel. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, yeah. I wonder, maybe it's because it's so chorusy. That's like the catchiest song on the album.
Yeah, I think that.
I like that album. I think like that song a lot.
Anything, like his, one of his favorite albums.
It's one of the least like Billy Woods kind of songs.
Yeah.
Because it's like very catchy.
It's very accessible. Yeah. And like one of Fantano's favorite records this year is that Liturgy album. Have you heard that yet?
No, you've shown me Liturgy before.
Well, I started it and it is an impenetrably like intense album. Like, I've only listened to the first two songs, and the first song's like 9 minutes long.
Yeah, that shit, you know, I put that in the same in the same bucket as Lingua Ignota.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I respect the hell out of the artistry, but
it's hard to listen to.
Yeah, it's hard to listen to.
They embraced a much more like kind of chuggy, like post black metal sound on this so far. So it's a lot of like dissonant tremolo picking, and it's kind of I don't know if I like it yet, but I've only listened to a little bit.
I don't like metal, but that is the. If I'm going to like metal, it's usually black metal. I like the ambient, you know, kind of nature.
Well, I think you like that Sunbather album, right?
Yeah.
And that kind of, that's almost more of a punk album at times than a metal album.
A lot of times black metal bands have the least metal-y vocalist, you know, mm-hmm. A lot of times there's a normal singing.
It's usually somebody
it's
who read all of the Todd McFarlane's Spider-Man. And they're like, I just, like when they get interviewed at Amoeba, they're like, what's in your bag? They're like, Absolute Spider-Man, Todd McFarlane edition. They're like, I just love this one.
Or a lot of times a black metal band just has like a, you know, mysterious goth lady singing.
So good name and concept for a black metal.
Mysterious goth lady singing?
Well, the band's called Hobgoblin. It's based off of Hobgoblin from Marvel. And because Hobgoblin's been played by many different characters... Yeah. And there's like red hobgoblins and green and yellow ones now. It can just be, they'll just switch it up this time and it'll be a woman. And then that's your black metal thing. And
every song's a different woman singer?
No, every song is, it's just the woman lead singer is hot. Like she comes out as Hobgoblin, like comes out with the pumpkin bombs and shit like that.
Did you listen to the Blood Moon Converge album they did a couple years ago? Like they did the whole album with Chelsea Wolfe?
The last one I listened to was Warhorse or whatever it was called, something like that. I haven't heard it.
That shit was cool. It was all slow. It was all like slow songs. That was the concept.
But it was heavy.
It was heavy. It was just like slow, and they did the whole album with Chelsea Wolfe.
I see. It was really cool. When I first came to town, Nick Cave, Bad Seeds.
That's a wrap.
I think you know. Short. We'll keep it short and sweet today.
Oh, we're 37 minutes. We're long. I was like, that was like 20 minutes.
We had a lot of filler in there. Maybe we'll do another Henry's Dream song. If you want to support us, check out our Instagram at Jubilee Street Pod. There's a link in our bio there that'll take you to all of our important links. So you can find us on Spotify Music, Apple Podcasts. Make sure if you're on Spotify to follow us. That helps us out a lot. Leave a review. Same for Apple Podcasts. Follow, rate, subscribe. Those 5-star ratings really help us. Do all that stuff. Keep coming back, keep listening. Jubilee Street.
Peace.